Welcome to the Digital Agency Pros Podcast with Andrew McBurney, your host of Digital Agency Pros. In this podcast, we sit down and talk to CEOs, founders, and professionals in the marketing world and talk shop all things related to building an agency and marketing. All right, let's get into it.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode. Today we have Spencer, and Spencer and his team of trusted media advisors offer a full line of world-class digital marketing services from search marketing to website design. They deliver a unique blend of boutique-style attention and powerhouse results to clients in more than 54 verticals across the US, Canada, and the EU, with a referral rate of over 92%. All right, let's get into it. Hey guys, welcome to another show. And today we have Spencer on with us. Welcome to the show, Spencer.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Awesome. So how'd you get involved in your digital marketing as a career, and how'd you get to where you're at today in your agency?
Well, it kind of has a story here. In 2008, I was a financial manager with 150 employees. The market collapsed and I saw that I had an opportunity to make another step. I'm the youngest of four boys and learned a long time ago that you have about three shots in life to get where you're going. And I felt like I had already knocked away a few of them. And so I really sat down and thought, where is the future going? I went in and sat down with my vice president and asked everybody what they were going to do. And they just put their heads down and said, we're just going to dodge and duck. Mm-hmm. And I just felt that it was not the opportunity for me because I was selling the American dream, and it felt like it was becoming more of a facade than a reality. And after doing some soul searching, I did some research on education and thought, what would I do by re-educating myself and creating a foundation that I've never had before because I didn't finish college at a young age? Mm-hmm. And so I kind of put my brain around it and said, I'm going to do it. I jumped ship. I went back to school with an IT focus, and my ultimate goal was to focus on technology for the rest of my life. It's where I wanted to retire and hang my hat. Mm. And by focusing on that education, I didn't go out thinking I'm going to be a marketing manager and run an agency. I went out and became a technologist. Why? Because technologists solve the problems that marketing agencies rely on. And so by doing that, that's kind of opened the door for me forming my own agency. Now, keep in mind, I put myself back in school, pulled myself away from an opportunity to pay myself. So I had to find other income. I found a web technology company to work for. It was phenomenal. It gave me the opportunity to see what the ins and outs of technology was. And by working with that company, I kind of realized that they were focused on collecting checks, not showing results. Mm-hmm. And it kind of taught me something, that I could be something different than what I'm experiencing firsthand. Mm-hmm. So I put my head down, took care of the client base that I could, finished my education. And in 2014, In 2014, I actually opened my digital agency, Lift Conversions. And by doing so, it was scary, you know, starting out from the ground floor. Every digital marketing manager out there hates you because you're new in the industry. But I had an in. I was a technologist. I wasn't a marketing manager. I was the technology that you needed to get your marketing effort done. And so I built relationships in that industry, and it kind of progressed to where we are today. But in 2014, I was able to start Lift Conversions, my digital marketing agency, and that's kind of where I am today.
That's awesome. And then, so when you say technologist, so you came in more on the technical side, like were you doing like development work? Were you managing softwares? Like what did that look like as you got involved?
Database, mainly database, backends, infrastructure, security. So I came in having all this protection and understanding of database and, you know, privacy. And that was a big thing. And so people were receptive to what I was talking about. So when I was sat at a marketing table with marketing experts, they always asked my opinion because they never felt they were being undermined or belittled by someone that could be better than them, because it was a technologist's opinion. And that kind of taught me that business is psychology. And so instead of saying, hey, I am this, I went out and became what I am and found myself at the table with the opening the conversations and realizing that I was had just the same amount of effort and energy as everybody sitting at the table. And that's what kind of moved me into the digital element of marketing, where I realized that no matter what, people need instant gratification. And the only way to get instant gratification online is pay-per-click. And so you have to kind of evolve into what is that next step. And in 2014, we connected with Google Partners, which is a new thing. And from that, we kind of understood the ecosystem and realized that paid is our door opener for every conversation. And then as the years progressed, we realized that full service was definitely the way to go, but we had to build that business up. And it started with becoming a Google partner, realizing the marketing element. And like I said, all the business network that networking and referrals that we got came to us from other agencies because it required a technology product that they weren't savvy to. So they relied on me to get it done. And once I took care of their clients in a professional way and never overstepped in any way, they realized that I was kind of the go-to person anytime they needed a technology element added to their effort. And then that built up a foundation of people of trust. And, you know, once you have a trust, a foundation of trust, you can go pretty much anywhere you want to go.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that's one of the most underutilized aspects of building a marketing agency in general, or any business, is trust. Like, do your customers trust you? Do your suppliers and your partners trust you? It's like, or are they think that you're just in it for that next paycheck, kind of like what you talked about?
Right. We say that all the time, and we don't mean to belittle anyone in any way, but there's two people in your effort today: check collectors and check signers. I hire the check signers. Mm-hmm. Why? Because the check signers understand the bottom line. The check receivers are the ones that are doing their best to get the job done. But at the end of the day, when they go home on Friday and something isn't complete, do they worry about that all weekend? No, they don't. Because they collected their check on Friday. Mm. And so I'm focused on working with the people that write the checks, because it gets you directly to the source and it keeps you focused on bottom line. Another point, we started the no contract. In 2014, everyone was selling contracts. We said, contracts are like marriages. I only want to do it once. So if you 12 months to prove your business, go do it somewhere else, because I need to see proof in the pudding every 30 days. And so we started a no contract agency where we were like, if we can't prove ROI, we fire you. And they're like, huh? We've let go about 60 accounts this year. Why? Because if you get to a point where you're treading water, I'm not going to sit out in the lake with you and tread water, patting you on the back, telling you everything's going to be okay. I'm going to tell you, we've reached our end. We can't optimize anymore without any extra input. And so you might be better off finding another partner to get this job done. And it'll blow your mind. We have customers that we've let go that come back. And we joke. There's something I learned in a sales meeting years ago called Ugly Jerry, where if you come to me and leave me and come back, your prices are doubled and you know it. And we tell you, hey, it was this, now it's this, because you left and you're coming back. And so we created kind of an ecosystem where we're not trying to be overbearing, but we're trying to just be on point. If you want to tread water, find someone else. If you want to see logic in everything we do, hire us. If you want to prove ROI and focus on what is the bottom line, low-hanging fruit, and how do you scale to that next step, hire us. But you will never get a pat on the back or a fake report, you know, telling you everything's great when the world's on fire. So that's kind of the basis of who we are. And it's grown today. I mean, just one additional thing, we stopped making sales calls in 2016. We work on referral only. We haven't looked at a PowerPoint in over 4 years, a sales presentation. We don't even understand the logic in that, because we built a referral network that says, if I am selling to a referral partner, I'm not selling them anything. I'm educating them. And then they become clients of ours. And so just a little, unique thing about Lift Conversions, we don't have a sales team. We haven't made a sales call since 2016. That is frigging ridiculously awesome. And we sit above 90% referral rate.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And that's,
I pinch myself every time I say it. And don't get me wrong, as much as I'm showboating right now, the rug could be slipped out from under you tomorrow. And I know that. But at the end of the day, we just felt that in 2016, I polled 100 people and said, when's the last time you bought something from a random sales call, whether at your home or at your office? And no one had ever agreed that they had bought anything. Mm-hmm. So we said the idea of, you know, cold outreach is just dead. It's kind of like that old saying, you know, build it and they will come. It's kind of a cliche, but it still means something, because if you build something strong, people are looking at you and eventually they come over.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially in an industry such as like a marketing agency, where it can be seen as a commodity, and more so if you're cold outreaching, right? Whereas that's not the case, in my opinion and in my experience, where if somebody's coming to you, they're typically like, a lot of those objections, they've already talked to somebody that have handled all those objections for you. They've told you how much they pay. They've told you the results. They have recommended you, and they come to you, and it's no longer that awkward kind of like, oh, how much do you want to pay, or how much do you want to charge? Like all that. It's more so like, hey, can you help me? Right.
Right.
And I absolutely love, and I 100% agree, 100% in line with all of those values that you talked about in terms of keeping the client's results top of mind all the time, right? It's not about just maintaining a customer relationship for the money. It's about maintaining it so that it's a win-win situation at the end of the day.
I look at it like every client of mine has a mortgage, a family, and lots of things going on in their life, and I'm an added expense. And so I have to validate that added expense. And by doing that, it breeds lifetime value. I've got over 50 clients that were doing business with me 15 years ago with a completely different vertical. And it's because when you kind of, you know, become a trusted partner, hey, I heard they're selling the Chicago River. Is it true? Call Spencer. Hey, Spencer, is the river for sale? No, the river's not for sale. And so when you kind of become that, it builds this foundation. And that's what we really take pride in today. And it, I mean, don't get me wrong, we're no nonsense. I mean, I am as quick to snap at something that's not right. If someone puts anything unethical in front of us, we will snap back, because we're trying to do things in a logical way, a professional way. We're not selling out. We've had multiple offers. One offer so big that my wife wanted to divorce me. Not really, it's a running joke, but we had buyout offers of our company. And the reality is that I'm building this company to give to one of my employees. We scaled 8 employees. We're down to 6. 2 of my employees are fixing to start their own social media company, and I'm giving them their first 10 accounts. So instead of going, oh God, you're going to leave me and you want to do your own, I'm like, oh my God, that's great. You're flying. You got your wings. And then they're like, we're scared. We don't know what to do. And I called 10 of our clients, and they're going to take 10 of the deals right off the bat. And so now I hired people, trained them to do their job. They did it so well that they're starting their own business. I mean, I feel like a dad. So at the end, I mean, and most companies would be through the moon, because it's like, man, I spent 3 years with you and now you're leaving me. But man, I look at it like fly. And so just another example of just taking pride that things go up, things go down. We're the type of company that every chance we get a chance to scale and be something we're not, I don't bite it. We don't want to be that company, you know, and we're very blessed for that. And why do we know that? During this last outbreak, you know, some of the biggest people in marketing that I always thought were the people that I followed them forever emailed me looking for work. And so it shows you that the world changed, and it truly is about no nonsense relationships and just being the person that you say you're going to be.
Yeah. I love that. Now, in terms of coming into this industry, more on the technology side, it sounds like you're implementing a lot of stuff, and then you open up an agency. There's a lot of gaps that need filled of knowledge, of skills, of like leadership, sales skills, all these things, right? Are you the sole founder in your agency? Did you come in with like complementing partners? Like, how did you approach that as you were kind of making that transition?
I approached it like partners are dangerous. Mm-hmm. And if you need someone else's money to start your company, it's dangerous. So I took a loan from my savings account, started the business on my own. I'm a single member LLC. There are no investors. We're kind of keeping it that way because I am the single decision maker and I've made good decisions for my company. And I take pride in this, and it's a little bit of showboating, but for the first 4 years of my company, I had a fancy CEO paycheck, and I always felt it was gaudy to pay myself such a fancy check. But I went to so many different meetings where they're like, you're stupid if you're not paying yourself this money. And so what I did is I created an escrow account, and I started reinvesting the money that I actually wasn't using for myself into a side account. And what I did is I looked after several years, I had 2 years worth of payroll. So that means that I could shut my company down, do no business for 2 years, and everybody would still get their paychecks. And I realized, wow, that was a phenomenal outline. And so I took the money, and now it's sitting in a secondary account, kind of sitting there to protect my employees. And so when the world gets crazy and, you know, things get tight, we don't fire people. We don't cut pay. None of that. We're keeping things moving. And that is a little bit showboat, but we take pride in it because every chance I had to buy my second Mercedes or whatever, I opted not. I thought, how can I feed my employees? How can I do something better for the people that work for me? So yeah, that's a big deal for us.
I love that. And then in terms of like when you were first starting out, you start Lyft Conversions and obviously you need clients, right? It sounds like you kind of tapped into your network, or were you doing a lot of cold outbound? Like what did that look like in the early days for you as you were starting out?
The secret to success, and this is for anyone at any age, even today, go find a network and become an authority. I found the Google Top Contributor Network. I was a Google top contributor for AdWords, one of 20 in the world. We got to see all this great information nobody saw. I got invited to their corporate office. I just became a part of this program. And I fast-tracked myself where I became helped out in the search network and all these other platforms where I became this platinum product expert. And because of that, hundreds of thousands of people every day saw me on platforms helping random people without any intent other than helping them get to an answer. And when I became or built up this aura, I looked back and realized, my God, I've helped over 100,000 people. I've made a difference for over 10,000 people on search. I've had private letters come from people I don't even know, all because of me taking the time. And what I did is I went and found my voice. I didn't act like I was someone I was not. I never tried to insinuate I was better than the person before me or after me posting. I always kind of kept it a team effort. And that was it. I just built an internal network. And that internal network started utilizing, and like I said, for technology services first, that got me into the network. And then as it kind of opened up, people were like, I don't want to work with the client anymore, whatever. And they were like, hey, we love working with you. And that kind of filled the nest, so to speak. And from that, we got to a kind of a nest egg. And those nest eggs is when we started saying, you know, we really work on referrals. This is the nature of our business. We'll show you how to do it for yours if you help us with ours. And that kind of made it to where we are today, where, you know, the 90% is just freaking phenomenal. I mean, we calculate the numbers every month just to re-slap ourselves. But it's like when you have that many people coming back to you on a monthly basis, and then even people leaving you. Got two meetings today of clients that didn't leave us because anything we did, the world changed and they needed to go do stuff, and now they're coming back. So it just kind of shows you that if you let people go every now and then and don't chase and stalk and harass, they come back to you. I had a client call me, it's been a month or so ago, and he was like, I was basically shopping you and about 10 people. I shopped everyone. These people won't leave me alone. You never called me. You gave me everything that I wanted. You never called me. You answered my questions. I was so blown away by you. I'm still being harassed by people I'm telling not to call me anymore from these other agencies. You get the deal. I didn't even know. I was like, it had been weeks since I sent paperwork. I didn't even realize it, but it validated that, man, the grinding people and continued stalking and harassing of sales elements is fatal to a lot of companies. And so we kind of, you know, try to let them do what they need to do and take the time. And then a perfect example, even small and medium businesses during COVID, we gave over $100,000 in free fees to small businesses that couldn't make their payments. That was a mass. My accountant hated me, but at the end of the day, it made me feel good. Every one of them are still my client today. Because I just said, hey, whoa, the world changed. Okay, let's not break anything. And the beautiful thing is half the clients that went into culture shock I said, well, what do you do if you're stuck at your house for a year? Fix your house website. And so everybody that shut down in marketing and kind of went dormant over this chaos of the last year, we kind of veered them into, hey, paint your house website, you know, get things moving. So when things are ready to go again, you're ready to take off and go. And so it's funny that we were able to kind of move these people through this chaos, but also keep them in line. And that was a big deal. That was, I'll be honest with you, that was a lot of money and a lot of fees that could have been in the bank account. But we just thought utilized giving it back to the customers was a better outcome.
Yeah, and it's a smart business move, right? When your clients win, you win at the end of the day. And yeah, I love that. That's super cool. Now, in terms of where you spend your time on a day-to-day basis, like, are you, like, how plugged into the client campaigns are you to ensure that you are getting results, you are seeing that people are coming through that process, they're not being neglected, like, the certain touch points are happening when they should be? Like, what does a typical day for you look like?
Well, one, I'm a Virgo. So if you've ever met one, I'm sorry. I've got file cabinets inside of file cabinets. I set up an ecosystem. It's a master Gmail for the client on anything we do. Everything we connect is with that master Gmail. Contact forms, conversions, everything in between. Create folders in an account. Every time something comes in for that particular customer, it goes into the folders. Every morning when I log in and see all the folders listed down the side and all of them have inbox. That's all call rail contact form. So it's all conversion data. And so me as an CEO can quickly prune and go, hey, nothing's not working. But most importantly, me being a Virgo, we are probably the only agency I know that opens AdWords every day. We have an AdWords manager who stares at the system basically all day long. I mean, no one does that. We actually white label for about 30 agencies, some premieres. No one does that. We watch it like a hawk. But me being a Virgo, I have this really tight system that, like, right now I can see one account hasn't had conversions this morning. And so when I get off this call, I would go check, hey, what's going on there? And the funny thing is, I already know because I looked yesterday. Their credit card expired. They need to update their credit card. So that's just a perfect example of, you know, if you build an ecosystem where you can continually check things, but not have to read everything, get a quick view, 10, 8, 5, 10, 8, 5, whatever, that allows you to basically see everything. Then everything is fed into from a master side data studio. So I have a data studio report that I can manipulate, dynamically move and do anything I want to look at data. But you know, the reality is that, you know, the results kind of speak for everything that we do.
I love that. So you really do have visibility on what's going on. At the end of the day, you're taking that full responsibility. You're not necessarily like disconnecting from that.
Oh, you're spending millions of dollars of other people's money. I hope you have an eye on it. And if you don't, leave, quit your job, because we need people to keep eyes on money. It's very important. I mean, these are livelihoods, and it's not even the CEO I'm worried about. The CEO has 15 employees who are making my economy work. Why would I want that guy to lose? So yeah, everything is really, really important to us. And we're almost kind of overbearing. We get emails from clients all the time saying, my God, your reports are so in-depth and detailed. I'll be honest with you, I don't read them, but thank you so much for giving me all this. So like, we go above and beyond because we want to explain the whys. But the beautiful thing of our overbearingness is that we've never had an agency in 7 years of business belittle us. We've never had an agency take over our work and say, oh, they clowned you, they lied to you. Never. That's awesome. That is pride, because there hasn't been an account, 87% of the accounts we audit have massive errors. But do we run and tell the client, oh, they screwed you or whatever? No, we fixed the problem. But we take pride that our work, when it's ever handed off, that there is, that we've ever never been yelled at saying, hey, they told us you were lying the whole time, et cetera, et cetera. And that's the biggest thing to me, because my reputation is the only thing I'm buried with.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a good point. And it's unfortunately in AdWords, that is the norm. Like daily, like if you're checking on a weekly basis, you're in the top 10% of managers.
Right.
And it's crazy. Like there's so many times where it's like, they'll have that, like those first 6 weeks will be nice and lot of communication and whatever, and then they just get forgotten. The new business comes in the door, they don't get looked at again. So I love that you have that process where you're really staying on top of people consistently throughout the lifespan of that relationship. And you're not just putting in that work on the front end and then it kind of fizzles out, which is unfortunately the reality in a lot of situations.
Mm-hmm. You're right. If you don't work hard, it's not going to come back to you. And, you know, the bottom line is that you have to treat everybody just the same way you want to be treated. It's pretty simple. It's cut and dry. Like, I mean, we have another rule at my company. If you need a tool to do your job, quit, because shit breaks all the time. And eventually you're going to look dumb using that tool. And so like all the companies that went under during COVID were completely tool based. And when all their clients went, oh God, the world broke, they called the company to make massive changes. And that company relied on all those tools. And when they started emailing those companies to make changes, they weren't in their offices. And so my gosh, what a ripple effect that made to all these businesses that were like, my God, I use a button that tells me if it's working or not. And that button, nobody's answering the button now, but the client's asking me questions. And so now I look like a putz. We don't ever want to look like a putz. If we can't break it down with a pen and paper, then don't do it. And don't get me wrong, tools are great, but you know, I'll be honest with you, you got to keep your eyes on everything. And that's something. And then one last thing, I kind of like to highlight some of these things that we run with is we have a policy of some will, some won't. So what? Next, meaning the world is too big to get bogged down on anything. So if they come to you, you present your data. If they don't like it, you continue on. And so that attitude allows us to not get bogged down on things that we thought we were going to get and get excited with. And then that kind of validates why when you ask us for data, we give you everything you ask for. And then we even say in the bottom, we're not going to call you, email you again. This is what you asked for. You know what I'm saying? And so that kind of plays into that. And we're, you know, at times it comes off a little overbearing and I apologize, but we're just trying to be the best we can be for our clients.
Mm-hmm. Well, at the end of the day, like the people who are paying money for this stuff, they would rather you be overbearing than a ghost, right? And like I'm working with an agency right now and it's like, I have to actively reach out to them to be like, hey, how are things going? Like, I have no idea, right? Like, are things going? Cause like, there's not that much communication going on here. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's not like whenever I operated my agency before my pivot, that was a huge part of it because I knew even if we got them outstanding results, but the communication sucked, the rapport wasn't there, they could be scooped up by a competitor pretty quickly. Right. There wasn't that relationship of trust and that foundation that's needed for that long lasting relationship just didn't exist. Right. Now, in terms of one thing that you're doing that I think is really smart that I think a lot of people neglect is doing white label work. And the biggest thing I hear people say, like that's actually how I got my start, was doing SEO and AdWords for bigger agencies. I didn't have to worry about sales, whatever. I could just focus on the technical stuff. And the biggest reason I see people saying that they don't do it is it dilutes their brand, right? Which is like, it doesn't have to, right? Like you're building up a kind of a secondary brand almost where it's like you do work for agencies. It's a different than your main brand that's customer facing at the end of the day. When did you make that decision to kind of go that route? Or was that something where it's like people saw you speaking and they're like, hey, we have clients. Can you help us out? Like, what did that really, like, how did that develop?
I would say a mix of both. You know, being in the network, the Google network, Google has gone through many changes, and every time they change, it whittles out some people. And when people get whittled out, they still want to be participating for their clients' benefit in an ecosystem, but they no longer want to ride the boat. And so that opened the door to a lot of agencies that just came to us and said, hey, can you help us? We're, you know, Google updated their system. We're not going to learn it this month. Can you, you know, kind of get involved? And that allowed us to, you know, get in and kind of be that quiet, silent partner. And we're kind of weird with white label. We don't white label ourselves. If we can't do the job ourselves, we're not going to take on the work. And we tell that to all of our white label partners. So if you're expecting us to give you work, that's not how we roll. But we love white labeling. It makes a huge difference for our clients. And probably of our book of white labels, half of them, the clients know that we are the white label partner. We were brought on to make this the absolute best it can be. And then the other half, they don't know. We report. But the beauty of white label, like you said, cuts out of dealing with the clients. And if you've dealt with clients for a long time and you get to kind of pull out of that, it's phenomenal. And, you know, a perfect example, one agency brought us 60 clients. Mm. One agency. So like you go get four or five of those guys and, you know, and then the funny thing is I always love saying this. We work with premiers. They have a bigger badge than us because we never cared about trying to escalate the badge or be the badge that we're not or whatever. And we work with great premier partners and they are freaking phenomenal. They're premier because they are not afraid to scale bigger than anything in the, but then they have all this work to do. So, you know, it is amazing that, you know, occasionally when a client's like, well, you're not a premier or, you know, and you're kind of like chuckling in the back of your head going, yeah, we're not a premier, but we do have their work. So, you know, the white label, I will say, is it pays, it has value, but you have to be cautious with it because you are not doing the work. And so you never want to act like something you're not, but it adds tremendous value to people because AdWords is its own ecosystem. And truly, if you're not staying on top of it every day, then you're lost. Log into AdWords today. If you haven't in 6 months, you will be confused. It's making you push a bunch of different buttons and create a path that's just different. And like I said, a lot of my professionals are like, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to get to do the Google certifications. I don't want to follow all that. And we're kind of staying in it because I just learned a long time ago that if you work real hard to be in something, you shouldn't just fizzle out, you know. You know what I mean? So that's why we're like not turning in the badge because Google partners, being partners, it's a blessing to have a partnership, but it means nothing. Mm-hmm. They just want us to spend more client money. And all right. We care about is not spending client money. So that, I'll be honest with you, we joked this year was going to be the year that a small agency was going to fire Google and Bing because we wanted our clients to realize that they are our partners, not Google or Bing, the ecosystems making billions. So we've talked about that, but we want to play it cool because we don't want to create ripples and negativity for anything that we were a part of. But there's no value in that. Partnerships today are just about, I can't do it on my own and you're doing it. So how can I get into your business and do it? Or you're doing it for my people and I want you to spend more money. So the ecosystem has kind of changed, but we joke with our clients all the time that you are our partners. And then we have another analogy in AdWords. We always joke that AdWords is Vegas. Mm. You're going to Vegas and you got $1,000 and you're there for a week and you can spend $1,000 on gambling. Do you walk up to the best looking dealer and say, hey, dealer, here's my $1,000. I'm going to be here for a week. Help me spend this wisely. Well, that's working with Google. Mm-hmm. Why in the world? And so we get it all the time because Google oversteps where they'll call client accounts and the client will call us and be like, we're like, why would you work with the dealer?
Yeah. And they're like, I've run into that too. Yeah.
They're like, wait a second. Yeah, you're right. They keep telling me that. And then the best part is when Google tries to say, oh, we found problems in your account. We'll squish them like a bug with the client on the phone because like at the end of the day, but anyway, that's just, I like to highlight some of those things because it's truly an auction and you're battling with a lot of competitors every day and you can do it in a competent and logical way where the people that know what they're doing will stay at the top and pretty much feed their businesses. And that's what we try to do. And then, you know, just another element of AdWords is to imagine being an agent for a large insurance company. And that agent has, you know, a fraction of money to spend every month. And that big company is spending a great deal of money in their city every month. Mm. How is it possible that that small agent beat the corporation every month for the last 2 years? How? Mm. Optimization, logic, quality control, you know, caring. And so that's what I'm saying. We take pride when you go in and beat one of the biggest bad boys in the market with like $100 and you're like, so anyway, those are the little nuanced wins that, you know, kind of continue us on this journey.
Yeah, I love that. You just dropped so many nuggets there. One thing that I'd love to talk more about is that whole idea of staying on top of and squashing these issues that get brought up by sometimes cold prospectors. They'll like send that random generated report saying, here's 900 errors on your website. And meanwhile, like there's none, or the thing that they're saying is an error, isn't an error or whatever, right? Or the other things that are really annoying is whenever Google, either they make changes to the account, because sometimes they make changes these days without even telling you, and that's really frustrating. But the other part is those which are intended to be helpful, the emails that go out and being like, hey, let's hop on a call, right? Or whatever it might be. And then you have somebody will do it and then they're like, oh, well, they said that we could raise our impression rate by this, like by doing this. Right. It's like, well, that's not what we're trying to do here, right? That's not the goal, right? The goal, like the more impressions, the more money you're spending at the end of the day. What's the level, like the quality of those impressions? Who are we getting in front of? What's the intent behind the impressions that we're actually being seen for? That's what matters. And
right.
A small business doesn't know that. So you can tell them, like, it's not hard to tell somebody and be like, hey, we're going to raise impressions. It's going to be amazing. You're going to be seen by more people. And you can make quite a compelling case that small businesses be like, yeah, let's do that. Right. But meanwhile, it's completely not in their best interest, like you mentioned.
Right. It's obnoxious, but we train our clients. And don't get me wrong, I've fired a lot of people because of this. Hmm. We have our clients trained so well, and I take pride in this, not like they're trained, that they understand that when they get a random email, the first thing they do is forward it to us. Mm-hmm. Hey, Spencer, I got this. Didn't even read it, but hey, oh, don't worry about it. And so, man, when you get those emails from your clients where it's like, hey, I didn't even read this. I got this. Just wanted you to see it, Spencer, or whatever. That's amazing, because mm-hmm. that shows you. But then I'll call Google and squish them. I mean, I've sent many powerful emails saying that, you know, I'm a partner and you're undermining my business. And at the end of the day, that could be a lawsuit one day, because if you tell someone you're a partner, but then you call and poach their book of business and you have proof of it, I'm just telling you, you can get in trouble one of these days. And so that's why this ecosystem keeps going through so many changes. Mm-hmm. But the beauty of it is that if a client ever calls us with, I've been sold the river, and I can't convince them that the river's not for sale, I will go load them on the boat. Mm. Yeah. Meaning you can't bring them back, but you know, but at the end of the day, just trust and training, where if you get third party anything, and then the day of SEO is dead. It's called on-site. It's called location. It's called, you know, we call it dog circles. You start with a small circle and you work your way out and you continue to do that and you own your market. So at the end of the day, we just try to train people that it's like, you have to come at everything in a logical way and then focus on what works. And then the beauty of, you know, marketing is that you don't always go with the number one thing. We started marketing to find what? The low hanging fruit, the stuff that doesn't cost anything and gets a lot of people moving. And once you get hundreds of those transactions moving under your boat, it makes the bigger transactions move a lot easier. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, our goal is low hanging fruit at all times.
Yeah, I love that. Now, in terms of the types of customers that you're working with, are you working with like service-based businesses? Is it e-com stores? Is it software, enterprise? Like what does that look like? Or is it a mix?
We're pretty much a mix, but really service-based. E-com is like, we've tried to just stay away, but we help when we're needed. But service-based is really where it's at, because we're helping the consumer get to the problem resolved. We're helping the business owner convert on something. And in my opinion, that is the best path to be a part of. You're helping two sides.
Right. Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. And then the one change that I found, like I started out service and then I went into e-com, and e-com, I was working with much bigger budgets, but then also much smaller ticket sizes. You're selling like a $50 supplement, right? And you got to be real careful with your clicks and your conversion tracking to making sure that that's profitable. And
right.
one way we were able to do that, one thing I loved about e-commerce is having that end-to-end ecosystem of all the data, not just the numbers that you kind of have to trust your client knows that they know what they're talking about on like lifetime value and that sort of thing. But actually having that and being able to say like, hey, send us sales for the last 4 years. We're going to run those numbers. We're going to actually figure out what traffic sources are converting. What is the lifetime sources, lifetime value from these specific sources on these specific offers, whether it's like a free plus shipping offer or an ebook download or whatever, right? And that's one thing that I never truly got to that area, just because I didn't work with accounts big enough, frankly, to need to do that whenever I was focused 100%. Service-based, right? Well, like dentists and chiros and physios and whatever. And it was oftentimes, it was just like a few locations, right? With the, like, it sounds like you're managing much bigger accounts or in a larger volume of accounts. Have you gone, like, what level of, like, how deep have you gone in terms of tracking the quality of the calls and stuff? Like, are you going in and figuring out, like, okay, this person called, they clicked on the ad, but they were actually an existing customer, or, hey, they came through and they were like, maybe they hit like a Facebook campaign, but then they ultimately typed it into Google. Like, are you going that deep?
And oh yeah. Yeah. Calls are, I mean, CallRail is like the Bible to us. We force it on our clients. And, you know, I mean, that right there, when you set up CallRail and you train the inbound manager to grade the calls over the first 90 days, existing client, good, bad, whatever, that is the money. That, I mean, I'll be honest with you, contact forms are a journey. The call is what converts.
Yeah. And it's, yeah, it's something that I really had a, like, before I got into CallRail and tracking and attribution models and all that, it was, I would kind of see, I'd look at the numbers and be like, man, we got so many calls this week, right? And then it's like, you get into CallRail and you're like, oh, 70% of those were existing customers calling in to cancel their appointment, right?
Right.
And so, yeah, I think that that's just another way that you're really standing out by going into that detail, having that system you can follow to make sure that you are dialing in and actually getting new reach for these customers that are trusting you with their marketing dollars.
Right. It's all ROI. Everything is ROI. If we're not proving ROI, because ROI is based on the numbers change every month. If you continue to prove ROI, you get more money and the budget gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And all you have to do, and even on months when you just return X, you spend X and you get X. But if you created a lot of logical data to get to that Y, all you did is prove that we're headed for the Y. And if you continue that journey, then even when things break, it's visible what broke. The girl was sick yesterday. We had a part-timer who didn't know how to answer the phone. Every conversion that was normally a conversion went to crap. Or so right there, it's a matter of tracking. But yeah, CallRail, we force CallRail on our service clients because it, we joke and say that it's how we prove that what we're telling you is real.
Mm.
Because yeah, in reality is your contact forms is all analytics. It's showing you in Data Studio. Mm. But these calls right here, and when you look at your AdWords and you look at your calls from CallRail and see the numbers match consistently, then you can start to lean heavily on CallRail and realize that it's your Bible. Now you create CallRail folders for the client. And when I'm looking over right now, I see that all my clients have an average of 10 or more calls already today.
Mm. Nice. I love that. That's cool. And then one more thing, and then we'll start wrapping up here because I know you're a busy guy, but the idea of management, like you, it sounds like you've really optimized and dialed in the system of keeping on top of the individual accounts that you're managing. Is that really like the, I don't love the term like KPI or key performance indicator or whatever. Is that kind of what you're guiding? And then you kind of know everything else is in check, or are there other things that you're monitoring or maybe have key stakeholders within the business that they're monitoring to make sure things don't go off the rails?
I mean, it's basically just, I mean, we full encompass management. I mean, you know, basically having folders set, systems in play, having two full-time employees that are high level checks, knowing that all the checks are done every day. That is what has kind of kept us on top. Because when you've got the high level checks and you know you're checking everything, and most importantly, you're proving ROI. And when you don't prove your ROI and you're calling the client, like, hey, we got a problem. And they're like, oh, hey, I was great. I just closed three. Like, they're happy as heck. And you're calling with the problem. So it's just staying focused on the logic, the results, and the numbers. And I might have kind of went off there, kind of lost a little bit what you were asking. But, you know, ultimately, the end all is money and numbers for the client.
Yeah, no, I love that. I think that is a great answer. Cool, man. Well, I really appreciate you sharing all this wisdom. It's been really insightful. And before we start wrapping up here, I got three quick fire questions for you. And if any of them don't apply, you can just say pass. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So number one, what's your favorite business or marketing related book?
Right now I'm rereading The Sniper Mind by David Amerlin. It's kind of a book that, teaches you how to laser focus.
Interesting. And is that through a specific, like, is that sales, business? Is that just in general?
He's a marketing guy. Basically, I think he's marketing. His idea with this book was he went and talked to Navy SEALs all over the world and figured out their honing tactics. And he kind of tied honing tactics into marketing on how you can use those same tactics in meetings to overcome objectives, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a more inspirational book, not necessarily marketing, but, you know, how it all pulls together. But it's a powerful book. It's actually my second time read. And I just downloaded Einstein, His Life in the Universe. So I'm really into Audible right now. I'm a lazy reader, I guess is what you call it. You know, Steve Jobs, Elon Musk, The Everything Store, Shoe Dog, Autobiography of Yogi, How to Win Friends and Influence People, and then Influence the Psychology of Persuasion. So those are kind of my roll right now, and I kind of let them roll through, and they're very powerful, inspirational. I'm not really a Bezos or Musk, you know, super fan, but I appreciate their hard work and making something magical when a lot of odds were against them. So not necessarily licking the lollipop of them, but celebrate their success.
Gotcha. That's cool. And that's actually a nice intro into the next question, which is, are there any specific CEOs or entrepreneurs that you pay particular attention to?
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm kind of leaning back, but Musk has been, I've been paying attention to, because when they were shorting his stock and he was still putting his money into it and he won, that shows you that you want to pay attention to what this guy's doing. Internet, satellite, spider webbing, the inner part of the world. And now keep in mind, he shut those satellites up in a spectrum that people are mad. Why? Because their satellites won't go into orbit. So once he ties his satellites in a string, that guy's going to be the internet provider of the world. So I mean, if you think about where we're going, I mean, I'm going to follow him, because solar power, electric cars, you know, rockets to, you know, he's just a guy that I follow. But as far as marketing or anything specific to that, there isn't really anyone. You know, I've got mentors and things like that, but you know, that's about it. Musk seems like a highlighted guy, but he's just very unique. And when he invested his last $500 million into a business deal and it paid out, it showed me that you have to gamble. Even when you're really successful. So Musk is that guy.
Yeah, I love that. And I can't agree more. And number three, what's your favorite business podcast if you listen to podcasts?
Well, of course yours. But, you know, honestly, I just listen to more books than podcasts. But I would lean on this podcast right here. This is a great place to start. And I'll be honest with you, I've had a lot of great conversations with a lot of great presenters, but I've never had such an awesome conversation. So kudos to you for being a real conversationalist, somebody who, you know, knows how to talk to people as compared to just trying to get something done for your job. So very refreshing, to say the least.
I really appreciate that. Thank you, Spencer. Awesome. And then, so if people want to find you online, it's liftconversions.com. Is that the best spot to go?
Yep. Lift Conversions, Spencer Wade on LinkedIn. Either one, you will find me, and I will do my best to reach back out.
Awesome. Sounds good. And I'll send you an invite request on LinkedIn as well after this. And agencies, if you're listening, you're running an agency, you want to add a new, maybe a Google Ads to your agency, it sounds like Spencer's the guy to talk to. He's already doing that white label work. You gotta reach out to him. It's just going to be a new way to make money in your agency, right?
Love it.
Awesome, man. Thanks a lot.